The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Statmiller, with you on this Wednesday, 21 of June, 2017. And Gerald Celente is going to be here, hopefully. Mike, give him another call. He might have been on the telephone. That's why you got the answering machine. At any rate, we will have him up here in a few minutes. I'm a little confused. Is unemployment at a little over 4% in this country? If you believe the Office of Management and Budget and any other the people in Washington, D.C. that just smile and say, hey, the economy's up, the stock market's up. Yeah, yippee for us. Well, I remember a couple of weeks ago we posted up a story that talked about $8,400 stores closing. Well, the number of stores closing during this developing retail apocalypse is jaw-dropping. Forget 8,400. How about 23,000 for 2017? And folks, you know, we're almost summer solstice, which means we're about halfway through the year. So according to this prediction, in 18 months, 23,000 stores are going to shut down across America. And bankruptcies will exceed the financial crisis. Well, I guess things aren't that rosy. And what they've been doing, they've been building malls and just going crazy, building strip malls there all over the place. I was talking to my buddy Tom in Pennsylvania. He said, yeah, they built a couple brand new strip malls around here, and they are sitting there empty. Brand new buildings, and they're sitting there empty. They just did the same thing right down the street from where I'm at. Hell of a big complex. You ever been in Texas? They got this nice stony white stone that they build a lot of buildings. It's a beautiful building. Probably has at least, 10 available spaces. And we're not talking about tiny. It's, from what I could see, maybe 3,000 square foot plus for each unit. There's one tenant in there. And what they've done with this building is they've created another bubble, only this time with real estate on the retail space. Now, other predictions are saying that within 5 years, half the malls in America will close. Now, let me ask you the question. Did you buy a little bit of this stuff that, oh, the retail market's being hurt because so many people are shopping online? So I've been doing my own little impromptu asking people, you know, how do you do your shopping? And a few people told me that... You listening, Julie? A few people told me that they'll go up on, they'll see a sale or something, and or they'll see something in a store that they like, and then they'll go and buy it online. Not very often, but they do that. And there's other people that won't venture out of their house, and they do all their shopping via the internet. Now, but we're expected to believe that this internet is just so powerful that it's running these retail, the bricks and mortar people, just right out the door. I mean, just, it's too much competition. And folks, I, you know, think about that. Maybe some millennials are doing that more than the generation previous to them, because we just happen to be tactile. We want to see it, pick it up, feel it, smell it, whatever it is. And I don't doubt that some people would buy it online to try to find the best deal. But, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm going, how bad are things going to get? And you may not see it yet, but the scale of this retail apocalypse, as it's so called, is so massive that it's about to engulf the U.S. economy. As when a flood tide has crept around you on all sides while you were standing on a high spot on the flats not paying attention. You can look up now and see it all around you, and it's coming in rapidly. Since the final quarter of 2015, I've been writing about what I call the apocalypse, or echo-alypse, as he calls it, by which I mean an economic collapse that will prove to be apocalyptic in scale. Something that is both epic in scale, in the literal sense that it will dramatically bring the modern world into a new economic era. Well, it's not exactly what I would call an economic era. I might better then call this the retail apocalypse, because it's insidiously turned into a significant part of the greater event, and because it is partly due to E-Trade. Now notice, partly. Okay, I can buy that. But this has been going on for a long time, folks. Now, you barely begin to see the boarded stores. The numbers now coming in for stores slated for closure or bankruptcy in 2017, the balance of this year and into next year, jaw-dropping. And we're not using that term lightly. In case you're just arriving, let me start with a little recent summary. Been going with this staggering development so you can get a sense of how incredibly fast the momentum of this retail apocalypse is now building. In March 2017, economic forecast, he said, I particularly described seven headwinds that will batter the economy. At the close of the summary, I mentioned how retail is likely to blow up with major problems this year. JCPenney announced last week that it will close another, on top of what they're going to close, 130, 140 stores, citing weak demand and online competition. Macy's recently announced it will be closing 100 stores. Macy said profits fell another 13% and expects a 3% decline in sales in 2017. Kohl's and Nordstrom are keeping things in line by reducing inventory and cutting back on promotions. The retail apocalypse grows. Not even halfway through 2017, closures of the resale stores themselves have doubled last year's closures of about the same period of time. Okay, just going year by year here. And it's already exceeded the last peak in closures during the crash of 2008. Now, the bottom line here is real simple. Commercial Real Estate Investment Trust, or the REITs that they call them, R-E-I-T-S, malls, mortgage-backed securities, remember those folks? Yeah. And their bankers are in a lot of trouble. The anchor stores are closing up, which will pull others down in the wake by reducing traffic to malls. Thousands of new stores opened and rent soared. This created a bubble, and like housing, that bubble now has burst. According to Credit Suisse, 20 to 25% of U.S. shopping malls will shut down within the next 5 years. While this is due to a paradigm shift in how people do their shopping, not just an overall reduction in retail sales, it will send shutters and close shutters throughout the real estate-based retail economy, having a huge impact on construction, land sales, banking, jobs, etc. That was less than 2 months ago. And now many are calling it a retail apocalypse. If you think we're exaggerating, the numbers for the retail apocalypse are fully before us, and they are downright frightening. This thing is massive, absolutely awe-inspiring in scale. And we can use those kinds of descriptions and not be exaggerating in the least, because this retail meltdown already exceeds anything seen in my lifetime, the writer says, 58 years. There is also nothing Trump or anyone can do that will stop it, because the tide has already closed in around us, hence the pretty visual when you get surrounded and you're on high ground, and before you know it, you're drowning. Now, quietly, almost unseen, it's in full sight the whole time, if you knew where to look. Now, these major retail store closures are already scheduled and being implemented right now. The boards on the windows start arriving on convoys of semi-trucks all across this country this summer. Harry Dent, which some of his information is good, some of it imaginary, and I think some exaggerated, but according to the story, Harry Dent gives some colorful perspective as to how this calamity is going to end up. He says it's kind of like a scene out of Resident Evil. Sheets of newspaper scratch along the dusty linoleum floor of winds that beat them into the remnants of a bench or through an open glass door into the darkened, empty space beyond. Wait a minute. Isn't that the opening chapter of Atlas Shrugged? Hold on 1 second here, folks. I think this might be our guy. At any rate, escalators haven't run in decades. The air itself looks dusty. Could this really be the future of the American mall? Not unless we have a nuclear apocalypse. And as for retail apocalypse you've been hearing so much about, well, it's bad, yeah, and it's going to get a little bit worse, a lot worse. Now, this was predictable, and it's been predicted here for well over a year. But particularly of late, we have closed in on a new arrival. The retail apocalypse has moved from the realm of growing threat and economic predictions to a full-on event that's happening all around us. Now, after more than a dozen bankruptcies this year contributed to thousands of store closures, visibility for the industry is so poor that retailers are pushing for lease renewals as short as a year or two, down from 5 to 10 years. Somewhere between 9,000 and 10,000 stores will close in the U.S. this year. Now, this is according to Garrick Brown, Vice President of the Americas Retail Research for commercial broker Cushman & Wakefield. More than twice as many as the 4,000 last year. He sees his figure rising to about 13,000 next year, and everyone's trying to figure out where the bottom of the market's going to be. Well, let me remind you, this is the same scenario that played out in 1929. Black Tuesday, market was riding high, everybody's dancing, hey, having a good time, and Tuesday morning they wake up to bad news. And then the bad news kept going on and on and on for about a decade. And what they did was the banks just pulled their investment or lending capital right out of the market. They made it dry up. The same thing is happening again. Not happening, it has happened again. Only this time, ladle on about $150 trillion in debt, and ta-da, you've got no way out of this. I think I've got Gerald with me. Gerald Cimenti, are you there?
I'm here, John.
How you doing?
I'm well. Thank you for having me on. Sorry I'm a bit late.
Well, I'm. Was that you that called, or was that your guy?
No, that was me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't answer you because I was on air.
That's all right.
You know, I was just sitting here, Gerald, going through some economic numbers, and this is staggering. We're halfway through this year. We didn't even make it to the summer solstice, and I'm starting to see reports here that I've just been going through that for the next half of this year going into 2018, there's more than likely going to be about 23,000 stores, retail stores, that close across the country.
Well, you've been getting the Trends Journal now for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember we've been writing about the pall on the malls, and we had forecast this was going to happen. It's not only online that's killing retail. They've been overbuilding for years. You have other companies like Marshalls, TJX. They're doing great. You have the Macy's that started gobbling up one company after another, and they became too big for themselves. And that's what's going on as well. We're only looking at about 13 to 14% of all retail sales online. That's not small.
That's not huge either. But
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so here's what we've been forecasting. For example, you just saw the takeover from the conglomerate, the monopoly Amazon, buying out Whole Foods. And then you saw all the reports coming out, oh, this is going to hurt Walmart, it's going to hurt Kroger, it's going to hurt... No, it's not. You know, they call Whole Foods Whole Paycheck because that's what it costs you to go shop there. And it's only about 3.2%, 3.4% of the $800 billion grocery marketplace. And the reason, or among the reasons Amazon bought it, because they've been BSing about people shopping online for food, and it hasn't been happening. So they went back to brick and mortar. The country has been vastly overbuilt with malls. The big companies like the Macy's and all of these other greedy companies, they're buying out, buying out, buying out, and becoming bigger and bigger. And they got too big for themselves. So there's going to be a shrinkage of it. Now, here I am in Colonial Kingston, New York, 90 miles north of New York City in the Hudson Valley. The third Dutch settlement in the United States. Buildings here that, as you know, I own a 1750, 1763, and a 1776, the Academy, where John Vanderlyn, the famous Hudson River painter whose work is in the Capitol Rotunda, went to school. This is where the Constitution, 90%, 80% of America's Constitution came from what they wrote over here at the Kingston location at the City Hall. It was the first capital of New York State. I'm making this point because this city, this beautiful old city, died when they opened up the Hudson Valley Mall. All the little shops went out of business. I remember when it happened because I moved up to this area in late 1970s. Now the Hudson Valley Mall is a ghost mall. Macy's pulled out. Penny's pulled out. You want to see a depressing scene? Check that out. Now you know what's happened? The downtowns that went dead are now being revitalized because the bigs pulled out and the entrepreneurs are getting back into business. So this is going to start happening all over the country. The negative has a positive to it. The greedy bigs got too fat, hungry, and they only looked at their bottom line and they forgot about the customer. So that's the positive side of this. All of those little towns that went under because of the malls, now these malls are closing all over the country. I heard you reading the numbers. So I was waiting to get on the phone. Those are real numbers. But people are still going to shop. And nobody likes to go drive anymore. You know, I remember when I first got into the business, and I was the chief government affairs specialist for the chemical industry back in the 70s, from 73 to 79. And I'd be flying, you know, all over the country, meeting with members. And I'd go into, like, St. Louis or Cincinnati, wherever. And the host would pick me up at the airport. And they'd want to show me the new mall that was built. Remember those days?
Oh, I remember them very clearly.
It's gone. It's gone.
You know, when
it's
I was
come and gone.
When I was a kid. Oh, we got a break. Let's take this short break here, and we'll be back with Gerald Celente right after this, folks.
We'll learn that packaging is all that ever is. Got the little black car, the little black dress. We got the guru and the trailer and the full-course dress. We got the software, hard drive, CD-ROM. We got the exploitation.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
And by the way, folks, you can also call the network at 800-724-2719. Hit extension 3 when prompted, and you can talk to our guy in there right now that'll be happy to take your donations. And be generous, folks, as generous as you can. We've been discussing crappy economics here.
Yeah.
We know. But we're also in this holding pattern, waiting for other shoe to drop. And one has already dropped. That happened in 2008. We're waiting for the other one. But until such time that that happens, we've got to keep this thing going. And the others are fading fast. So, folks, back the winning horse, and that would be us. Back here with General Salente.
No. Not me.
At any rate, by the way, before I forget here, I was not aware of this, that you actually have a Wednesday program at 11 a.m. on Progressive Radio Network.
Yes.
Okay. Well, there's your plug.
Yeah, well, thank you. And also, you know, I just heard the advertisement for Republic Broadcasting. And what a great great promotion, what a great advertising. And everybody listening out there, I mean, it's really well done. You know, put your money where your mind is. And people, you know, I was out last night at a dinner with the Italian, Ulster County Italian American Foundation. We were giving scholarships to young kids. And I'm sitting at the table, and one of these women starts talking about, oh, you know, we can't do anything. You know, I said, oh, I don't want to hear this. I'm so sick and tired of people saying, oh, we can't do it. I said, that's because you don't want to do anything. There's a great quote by Andrew Jackson, one person of courage makes a majority. You know, so become that majority. Put your money where your mind is, and you know, give a couple of bucks to Republic Broadcasting. And what a well-done advertisement promotion.
That was written by Michael Herzog and read by, and you do his show, Michael Rivero.
So it was really, really wonderfully done. So please, you know, do something to make the change happen.
Well, we're
again, there's another quote by Samuel Adams. It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men. And you're, you know, Progressive Radio Network and public Republic Broadcasting. Those are the Tyless minorities.
Well, and we've been doing it for a while. We just had our 13th anniversary.
Wow.
On June 4th. And, you know, I'm sitting here, Gerald, and I'm looking at this. It's depression. This is not a recession. We had the recession back in 06, which some claimed had happened before that. But let's just call it a depression or depression-like since 2008. And the same damn thing is replaying over and over, just like it did in 1929. What did the banks do? They dried up the investment capital in the markets for 10 years. For 10 years. There's a little difference, though, between 1929 and 2016, is we're $150 trillion, according to Ron Paul, $150 trillion plus in debt. Using this current money system, you can't pay back debt with debt because Guido keeps the juice running, if I can use that term, on the interest for the money you're going to have to continue borrowing to function. And I'm sitting here and I'm looking at this and I'm going, how do these clowns, how do these Congress critters, how do they, they're it's like they're walking around in a graveyard playing pocket pool with their eyes rolling and in their head, and they're whistling something like nothing is going on. You know, stock market's at an all-time high. Yeah, but you and I are covering the real news about 23,000 plus store closures in the next year and a half. We live in the real world. And a lot of people will not see this one coming. Well, just take, for instance, Illinois. The lottery commission has decided that by the end of the month, if they don't come up with a budget that they haven't had, the state has not had a budget for over 36 months in Illinois, they're going to stop selling lottery tickets there because guess what? The state can't pay the lottery winnings. They're 40, I think the last I heard, Gerald, the state is $47 billion in the hole. And that's not the worst part. Everybody's leaving Illinois. There's been 700,000 people that have moved out of that state just recently. They're heading for higher ground or better economies or wherever, but they're getting the hell out of Illinois.
There are two, you know, I had forecast that the markets were going to crash in 2012. It didn't happen. Tracking trends is an understanding of where we are, how we got here, and where we're going. I heard you talking about the 1929 depression and what the banks did and how it brought it on even worse. When you go back and look at the data from how it happened and look now, it's a whole different game. I got it wrong because there was no such thing in how we got here as a thing called zero interest rate policy. There was no such thing as quantitative easing. A bunch of criminals made this stuff up. Zero interest rate policy, by the way, is a war against we, the little people, who have no place to put our money, only to gamble in the markets. No interest rates anymore. And you remember the days when they had a thing called certificates of deposit,
mm-hmm.
when people used to have money in the bank in retirement and they'd move to Florida, you know, from the interest they were getting. All gone. So they did, what they did is they propped the markets up by this free money, just as Amazon, it's free money. What do they have? You know, their PE ratio is 200 and they were barely making any money. They get all this dough coming in. They just buy up anything they want. It's not costing them anything. Same thing with all these mergers and acquisition activity. You're getting money for free, the big guys. They clamp down on us for loans, but big guys get all they want for free. Same thing with stock buybacks, talking about the stock market. That's what brought it up. So what I'm saying to you is they keep coming up with these schemes undreamed of that keep the Ponzi scheme alive. Take a look what's going on in China. Go back only 20 years ago. This is not ancient history. China's total debt burden, corporate and government, was about $600 billion. Today, it's over $30 trillion. You think China's going to let this thing collapse? They're going to do everything they can, make up every scam that they can do to keep it alive. Matter of fact, just today, they're allowing the emerging market indexes now, you could start trading stocks in China. Not a big deal, but it's the first step toward a big deal. China's buying up the world. Now you see the slowdown coming in. Real estate investment by China, year to date, is down 31% because they're trying to keep money back in China. That's going to affect places like Australia, where the Chinese are the biggest buyers, foreign buyers of properties. And you're seeing since 2000, I think about a couple of years, the real estate prices in Sydney have gone up like 72%. So that's going to have a negative effect. But what I'm saying, John, is they're criminals, and they're going to make up any scam they can so they could stay fat and happy.
Well, and here is the problem, and I've been thinking about this, and you know, when something runs through your mind, we process it. We're always talking to ourselves. And, you know, I've always heard, Gerald, that if you talk to yourself, you're really nuts. If you really answer yourself, then you really, really are nuts. No, we do that all the time. We talk to ourselves in our own head. This is how we process thought, you know. But at any rate, the last couple of days, you know, I'd be thinking about the economy and looking at all things, and then my mind would get on to another subject. But this has been haunting me for the last couple of days.
It should be.
But the thing about it is that these criminals, I'm sorry, did I miss something on the East Coast that they wanted to keep compartmentalized? Has anybody been arrested for the great ripoff, the greatest human ripoff ever witnessed by mankind because of these bankers back in 08?
John, I do Trends in the News each weekday night. It's part of the subscription to the Trends Journal. Today there's a story in the Financial Times how they're going after Barclays and making a big deal out of it. This is the first time they're going after a top guy. And this is coming out of the UK. And I said, what a joke this is. Not one bankster criminal went to jail. And you had this Eric Holder, this fraud of a disgusting human being, that was the Attorney General under Obama, that the big banks were too big to jail. So that, yeah, I hear you. I understand what you're saying. That we are in a neo-feudal society. There's different, you know, I told you I was at this Italian-American Foundation meeting last night, and we're doing the Pledge of Allegiance, one nation under God, liberty and justice for all. And I said to myself, what a bunch of crap. What liberty and justice for all? You just said it. These guys didn't go to jail for screwing us. Taxpayer bailout? No, not a taxpayer bailout. They stole our damn money. It's not a taxpayer bailout. These slimers that call themselves politicians stole our money and gave it to their friends. It's a neo-feudal society. There are different laws for the economic elite and the political nobility.
And what is most disturbing, and it's an ongoing rot in this country, more bankruptcies, more personal bankruptcies, people losing their jobs, losing their homes, losing their husbands and wives due to economic hardship. I mean, I'm looking at this, and the pain keeps rolling on. And I'm casting my eyes toward Washington, D.C., hoping that the swamp gets, I don't know, nuked so it really dries up fast, or whatever the case may be. But
it's not going to happen without a new party.
Well, and or
it's not going to happen.
Or and politically, that has been tried before. But look what they keep putting together to run against the well-oiled and moneyed machines.
I know. They just had an election in France. This little Obama guy, Macron. He's a carbon copy of Obama. A little lying nothing. He's a Rothschild banker. A new party just started a year ago, and he won. And they just had another election, and he even won bigger. But only 57% of the people in France didn't go out to vote. What I'm saying is, a new party. We have the right candidate in a new party. That's why Trump won. And you know I forecast in my Trends Journal in May of 2016. It wasn't the messenger. If we had a halfway intelligent messenger, he would have slaughtered Clinton. It's the message. We don't have the messenger or the message. You mentioned Ron Paul. He's the only person out there I would have voted for. A man of integrity, doesn't sell himself out under any price, and he speaks what he believes.
And rather than having Mike Pence as the vice presidential pick, he should have taken Ron Paul on as vice president. That guy ran for president twice. The first time, Gerald, that he ran, people in Texas didn't even know that, that he was a Texas congressman, a U.S. congressman. They didn't even know that. But after the first run, down here in Texas, people knew who Ron Paul was. And that's what I said right from the start. Probably about the same time you made your predictions back in May of last year. I said this, that if you really wanted, you know, that was a ticket that could have been put together.
But they don't want him.
That's exactly right.
They don't want him. Look what this. Look at this Trump, just another liar. You remember him saying at the debates, you know, we don't know who these moderate rebels are. We never see their faces in Syria. I talk to generals. They don't even know who they are. And now we're bombing Syrian planes in Syria, taking out Iranian drones, dropping bombs on Syrian troops in a foreign nation that's done nothing to us, and they're expanding the war. It's against the Constitution. Another liar. And this whole thing, you saw our trend alert a week ago. The war with Iran is going to be the next World War III. They're teaching us to hate Iran. They're the worst terror-supporting nation in the country. No, they're not. Oh, they support Hezbollah. Yes, yeah, so do a lot of other countries. There are only a handful that don't.
But isn't Hezbollah a political party?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, there's a terrorist group that plays politics.
Yeah, you know who the terrorist of Hezbollah is? Yeah, they're Lebanese men that band together to drive out the occupying Israeli forces, who destroyed and occupied a good portion of Lebanon. So they were saying, and they're in Iran. Yeah, but they're in Syria, Iran. Yeah, right. They were brought there by the president of Syria. His name is Assad. They had an election in Syria. It was monitored by international monitors, fully democratic, and he was elected. Yeah, but I don't like him.
By 86%, not once, but two cycles.
Yes. So what I'm saying is, the country is being run. Trump is a perfect representative of what this country's become. Obese, or fat, slovenly, eats crappy food, speaks like a jerk. He represents this country, and the flip side of the coin are the Democrats, the cowardly little liars who missed their murderer, quote, I'm really good at killing people, Obama, who robbed us of our habeas corpus rights, killed over 4,000 innocent people with drone strikes, destroyed Libya, the most prosperous nation in Africa, and brought the war to Syria, where over 500,000 people have been killed. They are the representatives of America. Republic Broadcasting is a minority of the people, the tireless minority. And it's up to us to change it. Because if we don't, the next war we'll fight will be the one that Einstein, when they asked him, they said, how will World War III be fought?
Mm-hmm.
What weapons will they use? He said, I don't know. But they'll be using sticks and stones to fight World War IV.
You know, I sit and I look at this, Gerald, and, you know, Trump is doing some things, which, by the way, following this program, folks, on this network, we have Jamie Kelso hosting the Trump Phenomenon that I put on the network. When did we first fire that up, Mike? Was it April of last year? Somewhere around it, but at any rate, Trump is doing some good things, but
he's backtracked on so many things. Look, I was on Alex Jones on Inauguration Day, hosting the show for over an hour. And when and I was very positive on Trump. And now he's backtracked on what he's done on so many fronts. You look at his tax plan. Oh, yeah, we're going to even give the billionaires a bigger break. Do you know what the tax rate was for the very rich in this country under Eisenhower?
No.
90%. Under Reagan, it was 70%. Under Obama, it came down to 39.5%. Trump wants to bring it down to 35%. It's a disgrace that we got these Gates and these Bezos and these Buffetts with their multi-billions of dollars paying peanuts in taxes and washing it offshore, and all the other wealthy people and corporations that are doing it.
But that was part of Trump's reasoning here, that the...
He's bringing the money back, and then he's letting them going to do it again in that plan, letting them washing it offshore again in the proposal that he put out.
Gerald. Gerald, a third party? I think we're a little bit past that point. I think another party will come about only after the collapse, and if we do survive the collapse in this country.
Yeah, but that's it. You might not collapse. You don't survive the collapse. It doesn't come back. It gets worse. Remember, there used to be a place called Greece and Rome. That were the empires. And look at them now. You know, you could keep Egypt. Look at Egypt. Look where they were. Look what they become. And we could become the same.
Well, they're going to have a little bit of difficulty here because I wanted to get around to this point, but there were two things that happened with every industrialized nation around the world. First, we had gun control, which means basically that you don't have any guns. You don't have any rights to protect yourself. And there's another thing that they did was nationalized health care. Now, Gerald, forgive me if I'm wrong here, but wasn't Donald Trump, when he first started campaigning, without the second part to this, the second part came later, but I remember him saying that we need to just dump Obamacare, period. There was no dump and replace. There was just dump it. Am I in error in that or what?
Again, he's just like the rest of the people who lie their way into office. That's what I'm trying to say.
So here we are. I saw the little ticker here on, I don't know what news propaganda channel on television today. I'm tying up my shoes to leave the house to come into the office. And I'm looking at this little screen ticker. The Republicans are saying that we're going to have a health care bill ready and looks like we're going to pass it this time. And if I remember correctly... If I remember this correctly, the majority of the people in this country didn't want a managed or national health care, period. They saw the premise that, okay, we've got to have national health care, and Obama lied about it. The numbers didn't ring up. Insurance companies pulled the hell out of this thing. And now the Republicans are coming around and going, oh, well, we got a bill, it looks like it's going to pass. They did the same damn thing that the Democrats did. There's no bill for us to look at. They're considering it, they're going to vote on it, but we haven't even seen the damn thing.
John, you're talking about the Bloods and the Crips. I mean, really? You mentioned the Republicans, right? Who are the Republicans? Eddie Munster Ryan? John Insane McCain? Lindsey, did you come out of the closet yet, Graham? Mitch, you lousy SOB McConnell, you piece of crap. Take a look at the Democrats. We got little Chucky Schumer over here in New York. Dianne Not-So-Feinstein. Nancy Out-of-Her-Mind Pelosi. What are you talking about, Democrats and Republicans? How about pieces of crap? How about low-life individuals? How about people that never worked a day in their lives and have been sucking off the public tit?
What if Ron...
So you're trying to make sense out of criminals, psychopaths, and sociopaths.
What about what happened to Ron Paul? Did he get too old, too disinterested?
You reach an age too, you know. You know, Ron Paul is we're in contact. He was going to come to my Occupy Peace movement that I put on.
Mm-hmm.
I speak with Ron Paul. Hey, you know, guys, give him a break. You know, you only can do so much, and it's like you or I, without the money behind us, only go so far.
Boy, I know that one.
When I launched Occupy Peace, I had to go into my retirement account to make that happen. That cost me into the six figures.
And when is that taking place again?
Well, I'm not going to do it again. I can't raise the money.
Really?
Yeah.
But was Ron Paul too tired and worn out, burned out over politics to start a third party? I remember the Constitutional Party, Howard Phillips.
He's doing what he can do.
Yeah.
Guy's 76. I'm 70. I don't have the energy I used to have.
I didn't realize he was 76.
He's 70-something. I know he is, yeah.
Wow.
You know, you don't have the energy anymore. So, you know, it starts getting to you. You know, matter of fact, Eisenhower said, you know, anybody over 70 years old has taken his job. They should not be here.
I'm sitting here and I'm looking at the landscape, and I have not been a big fan of this, and I refer to it as a restoration project.
Holy shit! This can't be. Ron Paul is 81.
Is that right?
Yeah, I just looked it up. I just googled it up. Born August 20th, 1935.
Yeah, that would make him. That would make him, yeah, 1935.
Look at this guy at 81 years old. Look what he's doing.
Yeah. I didn't realize he was that old.
Yeah, Rand Paul's 54.
Well, but here's the thing. Gerald, here's the thing. We know this economy is going to collapse. It would have collapsed. I mean, I literally had a manager, J.P. Morgan Chase manager, down from New York that I ran into in the fall of 2009. And I'm talking to this guy, and they had betting pools in New York that the market was going to collapse in October or November. That's how sure they were that the markets were going to collapse. And the only reason it didn't is because the government borrowed money and injected it into the markets, or what we used to call quantitative easing that really hasn't. It's eased a little bit, but it hasn't stopped. You've heard Janet Yellen come up repeatedly and say, it looks like we might have to do a little bit more quantitative easing. We're not where we need to be. This is all BS. It is all BS. And the thing that I was relaying to you before, that this thought that I couldn't chase out of my head, of all the pain and suffering and all the damage that has been done to this country right now, when this collapse comes, I envision martial law, the people that don't have their little EBT cards.
Of course there will be. Of course there will be.
Okay, and a crackdown of the police state that they've already installed that's sitting there at idle against the general population. And we're not going to have time to strike up a third party then, and we're going to have to go into full restoration mode at that time.
But again, we could do it now. There's nothing holding us back.
Wait a minute. Gerald, I don't like disagreeing with you on the air. But funds for this network are very hard to find.
That's what's holding us back.
Well, and
but we need it, again, all it takes is one person of courage. And there may be that person out there.
Well,
I'm telling you, all right, I'm going to tell you a quick story.
Okay.
I have if you go to my website, trendsresearch.com, you'll see a big building with a sign, The Mohegan. It used to be an old vegetable store going back 100 years ago. And that was the old sign from the 1920s. Beautiful old building. I had Ralph Nader in here and Warren Buffett's son, Peter Buffett.
Is he a better guy than his old man?
Let me just tell you the story, and you decide. I'm talking to Ralph Nader 2 days before he's coming here, and he's saying, you know, Peter Buffett was just up to visit me in Connecticut. And he lives not far from where you are, down in Stone Ridge. I said, yeah, I know. I said, I'm his landlord. There's no little foundations in one of my buildings. So after the rally, we had about 1,500 people here. They closed down the streets, most historic four corners in America. You could go to our website, look at the Occupy piece, you could hear the nothing like it. And I said to Peter Buffett, for us to keep this going, I said, we're going to need money. He said, well, you know, why don't you contact my assistant? I said, listen, you're not doing me a favor, man. I said, this isn't about me. I said, I'm not going to contact your assistant. I said, you either want to give or not. So he said, let me think about it. And he didn't give me a penny. His father's worth what? 80-something billion dollars?
So much money that I, you know, these are amounts so high.
So I'm telling you a true story. Yeah. Right? This is Gerald Celente with Ralph Nader and Peter Buffett.
Well, you know, it's always come down to what America really is, who the government really is. And that's,
who the people are, and that's why I said to you that Trump, Obamas, the Clintons, the Bushes, they represent America in the worst ways. In morality, lack of passion and courage, grace, elegance, and beauty, all gone. Turn on the TV, they say that pigs can't fly. You've been to the airport lately? Look what this country's devolved into.
Well, and I've said this about the inner city and how that's been allowed to just degrade into absolute, I can't even think of a descriptive word for it. But I call that a culture, those that have a cultural deficiency. It almost sounds politically correct, doesn't it? But this is just not inner city. We've got a cultural deficiency across the board in this country.
I know. I'm shocked when I go out. I'm shocked when I go out. When I go to fine restaurants in New York, I listen to the people yelling, look at the way they're dressed. As I said, you go into flight, you know, I started flying first class in 1974. Would you like a lobster thermidor, sir, or a roast that they're cutting in front of you? And you didn't have all these jerks with this TSA crap filling you up and humiliating you. While the rich, again, in the neo-feudal society, they don't do that. They have their private jets. They have their access to freedom, as we're being treated like little slaves.
And a lot of people in the private sector have enough money around them that they're mistaking that for freedom, because they can hire high-power attorneys to get them out of just about anything.
It's a neo-feudal society.
And the rest of us are sitting here sitting on it and spinning on it. You know,
I pulled you over because your taillight is broken. Where'd you come from? Do you have anything to drink?
The last time
get out of the car.
Well, hey, Gerald.
Stand on one leg, recite the alphabet backwards, and put your hands on your head.
You know, Gerald, a short story here. I got pulled over several months ago here in Round Rock for speeding by a motorcycle cop. And he pulls me over. And he says, you know, you were speeding. And I said, yeah, you showed up on my radar detector. He said, you got a radar detector? You knew I was out there and you didn't slow down? I said, you spend your entire day on your shift driving around this city. I said, you know as well as I do, the only way you can make it across town and get the lights is by exceeding the speed limit 6 to 7 miles an hour, of which pretty much that's probably what you have on the radar. And he goes, no, it was 10. I said, excuse me, I have a heavy foot. And then the cop turned around and admitted to me that they've got this city so screwed up, the way they have built these housing developments, and the smart growth people came in and said, oh, well, you can control traffic flow by putting in one entry and one exit or just a couple. And they've built these little mini, they look like expressways here, and you're tied up. And now we have what we've never had in this little town. Now we've got, around 4:30, 5 o'clock, we got traffic jams. And the cop looked at me and he says, you know what? He says, they've been trying to find somebody to come in here to take a look at this and try to rectify the traffic flow and the problems surrounding that. But everybody that they contact, that they take a look at it, they throw their hands up and say, I'm not touching that. End of the story, the cop said, smiled at me and said, have a nice day. Because he knew exactly what I was saying.
Good for you.
You know, I mean,
Well, again, you want to talk about traffic? Go to New York City. You want to, a night in Calcutta? Go down into the subways. These damn things aren't running. They're breaking down every other day. The Long Island Railroad, the MTA, it's a joke. It's a joke. You got a bunch of imbeciles running the country.
Well, your principles, your five guiding principles for Occupy Peace was we the people tell Congress how to vote. I'm sorry, I thought we'd been doing that for a number of years. Congress must vote to go to war, of which they have, and they just turn that on to automatic pilot. If the president sees a threat to our security or national interest, boom, we just go bomb the crap out of people, secure the homeland, and close foreign bases, bring troops home. That's what Ron Paul said. I mean,
I know. I'm telling you, Ron Paul was going to come here. We had three flights. We couldn't pull it off.
We are heading.
This is the only action plan for peace in the country, John. I'm telling you, I went to six figures. It hurt me financially. And you know how many people say, "Oh, you shouldn't have done it." You know, I said, "Screw you! Don't talk to me like that." And we sent out 350,000 press releases over the course of a month. We got the grand total of no coverage. We contacted every peace group, every women's group, every group, environmental, on and on and on. Nothing from anybody.
Well, I hope they enjoy cities burning and blood running in the streets, because, Gerald, I'm not a big prognosticator, but a blind man could see this one coming.
Oh, no, look at the cover of our Trends Journal, John. You got it. USA, we have it crossed out. We have no DSA,
yeah.
Divided States of America. And look at the cover, the two people fighting with each other.
Yep.
It's right there. And please, everyone, do what you want to do. If you want to, go to our website, trendsresearch.com. Go to the Occupy Peace button on the left, and you'll see the whole program there. Dr. Robert Thurman, Uma Thurman's father, came. Gary Null from New York City. Ralph Nader. One after another. There's nothing but like... Paul Craig Roberts was here the day before to kick it off to the group that we had here. You know, I mean, these are top people, and we couldn't get any support.
And I'm finding that quite disturbing. And, you know, as I said, kill that bump, will you? Thank you. All the way. I've been doing a pledge drive. We had a set a goal here of 32,000 to gather for this network, and we just reached a halfway point, only it's taken me 6 weeks to get there.
Jeez.
And people just don't understand that when this thing winks out, I mean, we're literally, Gerald, we're literally the canary in the coal mine.
I know.
You know, because when the stuff hits the fan, they're not gonna countenance people sitting around telling anybody the truth. They're just not gonna have any of it.
John, we're in the same business. You have a magazine, and it's very hard to sell these days because people don't read like they used to.
All right, well, Gerald, on this happy note, I will.
But I do other things. And I surround myself with beauty. I have, you know, over 100 plants in my office, and I don't quit. And I keep, you know, trying to live the best life I can and practice what I say I do.
Yeah.
And that's what you do. And my definition of hell is taking that last breath and knowing you weren't the person you said you were or could have been. So I'm not going to hell.
I'm not leaving anything behind either. And I sleep.
All right.
I sleep well at night. Gerald Celente, thank you so much. We will see you next month.
Okay, thank you. All the best. And all you people listening out there, cough up some dough. It's not going to hurt you any tiniest bit if you put some money where your mouth is.
There you go.
And mine.
Thank you, Gerald. All right, folks, let's take top of the hour break here. Go ahead, Mike. Huh? Give me 5 seconds. That's 5 seconds that is gone. It's never going to come again. There it is.
Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.